Hey, Seattle, we got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm gonna see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to
Finally, we can go to sleep.
bed. See y'all in the morning.
David. Football. Football, David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Listen to three. Three sounds happy there. You know? It's very happy.
Comfortable late sending messages from anywhere.
Yeah.
Late at night.
With Sierra, his wife right next.
Who's on the pillow next to him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Who is worth more money, Sierra or Russell Wilson? Who's got the bigger powerhouse wife, Brady or Russell?
Oh, Brady.
Brady by a long way.
Is that
I don't
right?
think,
no,
I mean, I don't not, think Sierra's that. I don't think she's $100 million popular.
I
don't believe
I don't,
she
I
is.
I don't know. I don't haven't.
And I could be wrong, but I'm just, you know, my kids live in the world of pop music these days, and I don't hear them listening to a lot of that Sierra.
She had a big hit that came out a couple weeks ago.
Oh, she did?
Yes.
So she's back on the scene
she's
now.
She's back on the scene. A big hit. There's a new album coming out later this year.
They do have something called Celebrity Net Worth.
Listen to Handsome.
Listen.
He is the Sierra whisperer.
I don't
want to
blow
friends.
My own trumpet here, Dave, but I actually traveled to Brazil with them.
I was going
to
say.
I got a sneak preview of
trumpet.
Sierra's
How about a
brand new hit.
Yeah, not even close.
But I would say that Russell probably is, but especially based on his news
new
from overnight, is probably the main breadwinner.
Not that you want to poo-poo a net worth of $20 million, but the man.
Did you go
got,
to celebritynetworth.com?
I did, yeah.
Let's have a look at Dave Damashek, see what his celebrity
I know it's inaccurate.
Because it is on there.
While you look and that up, hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Damashek Football Program, presented by Zaxby's Famous Fingers, Wings, and Salads. We're looking forward to getting
I'll
over to
that.
Nashville, Tennessee.
I'll take that, Dave Damashek.
Congratulations,
it's a good photo, too, of you on the yeah.
We have,
Net Worth site.
I know
CelebrityNetWorth.com.
Yeah?
We're sorry to take this off the rails.
No, let me know.
I'm looking up Henry Hodgson now.
I don't think... Also, you spelt my name wrong.
Of course I did.
It's not going to help
you. S-O-N?
Yep. I'm not...
Stupid English spelling.
Not Scandinavian in any way.
Oh, good call. Yeah, not on there.
I'm not on there. Are you on there? I mean, you've got money in your actual name. You
let's
must
see. I'm gonna type Matt Smith in there and let's see what I'm worth.
The one I always throw.
What do you know? I am worth north of $9 million thanks to all my work on Doctor Who.
That sounds right.
That was a heck of a run. You know, we had on Doctor Who.
You were the best. You're my favorite Doctor.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Much
more popular in the UK than I am here.
Yes.
I never really thought about that, but that's a good point you bring up there. If money were a failure financially, especially, I always float Champ and Boss Bailey.
Right.
That if they had wound up being, you know, janitors, it would be sadly ironic for them.
Mm-hmm.
Same for money. What if he were impovereshed? You know?
Exactly.
Thank goodness he's not.
I'll die poor and destitute.
Instead, he is a world superstar, TV shows, play-by-play.
And celebrating his 20th wedding anniversary today.
Oh, yes. Mazel tov.
That is that's fantastic.
Foremost.
Well done,
appreciate
money.
That. Thank you.
Yes.
To
Tiger,
all the monies.
Tiger stole some of the headlines, and so did Russell Wilson. But yes, 20 years of marriage. Mazel tov to you and the missus and the progeny. The two of you have yielded. Plenty of football to talk about as well. We'll see how much. These are our best shows. People love these shows, especially in the off season, because they prove that there is no off season here on the DDFP. Thanks primarily to the man seated to my immediate left, all the way from London, England. He is taking a year hiatus away from his one-time beloved Miami Dolphins. It's Handsome Hank. No time for that. No time
Not
for
today.
It. How are you, Handsome?
I'm very well. You know, I couldn't be happier because I walked into the studio this morning imagining it would just be me and you sitting and you being a little grim-faced, and Money's here and he brings all the sunshine.
I'm a little Thanks. Sour about episode one of Game of Thrones. We only have so many.
We should get into that. What do we have time for that?
Five
what
left.
They put out on yeah, Sunday?
I'm going to make time. I'm going to make time for you.
If I were them, I would say, you know what? We didn't do a good job. We're going to add another episode.
That's,
to this season.
That would
Next
be
week.
Fair. What was with the cockamamie bird? I mean, the dragon flying nonsense.
Right.
You know what, though? It did yield my favorite moment of the whole episode.
The dragon?
Yeah, the dragon eyeing him. You know, when he's watching him do his business with the missus there, and you look over and there's the dress, you know, I think anyone that has a pet has perhaps been in that particular situation where maybe you're consummating the marriage or, you know, trying to yield some offspring and you forget the dog or the cat's there in the room and you happen to catch a glance and it's a very awkward moment. Significantly more awkward when it's a dragon that's very angry with you and disapproves of the action that's going on right in front of it.
Here's the thing to me, the overarching thing to keep an eye on, much like the dragon was Jon Snow in that episode, is people are going to die and have already died, if you haven't heard on the show, and they're going to start coming back. They're going to be the undead, and we're going to see these people again. Who will it be? Who among the living currently will be dead? And maybe it was cute that Jon Snow was making eye contact with that dragon, but how do we know that another dragon or both of those dragons ain't going to turn out bad, you know, turning evil? Spaghetti behind the glass is our resident, and all due respect to Handsome and Money, Spaghetti is our resident Westeros expert.
He really is.
He's all tied in. He read all the books.
Extremely invested.
If you are interested in that kind of thing, follow Eddie on Twitter. What are you at?
Still,
Eddie Spaghetti.
Edward L. Murphy.
Edward L. Murphy. Yeah. Okay.
Everyone has Eddie Spaghetti or any kind of way to Eddie Murphy is a very popular like handle people wanted. So yeah, it's still at Edward L. Murphy.
That's fine. But I would follow Edward L. Murphy if you really, because he's got some ideas about how this is all going to end up. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon. I mean, rip straight from How to Train Your Dragon. Him and Jon Snow and Danny flying through. I mean, what was that?
They needed
this
to
is,
do it.
Don't they understand what's, why did they need to do it?
To show that Jon could ride a dragon because only Targaryen blood could ride a dragon. That's the point of it. But they made it to like,
it's filling in. I mean, it's like that whole episode. It's filling in some pieces of the puzzle so that you can say, okay, now we're
those. It's those details that I wasn't, that I wouldn't know.
It's like 5 minutes later, you found out his lineage anyways. But the thing that they didn't want to have was like, if they're in battle and then Rhaegal, like his dragon was there and he just like jumps on and rides. People are like, hey, how did he learn how to ride a dragon?
Rhaegal.
Right. His dragon.
Oh.
That's the name.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Handsome?
I did, yes.
You knew
the dragon's name was Rhaegal?
Yeah.
It's after his dad.
You know what I got?
That's the name of his father. Here's my issue with it, though, that whole bit.
The episode?
No, just that specific bit. You know, it was a cold day. It's winter is here. Not it just coming. Winter's here. And she comments on how cold she is. You've been outside in the cold. If you ever ride your bike in the cold, it's twice as cold because you got the cold wind rushing at you. If you're riding a dragon in the cold, imagine how cold it would be. It'd be like sticking your head out of an airplane at 50,000.
Now your face should look like a chapped lip.
Right. A, that, and B, like take a hat. She, you know, if you're cold already and you're commenting on the cold, take a hat. You've got to wrap it. Like I say to my kids every time, you're going to get cold. It's colder. You may not be cold now, but you will be cold in 20 minutes.
It's going to be colder at 10,000 feet.
It's going to be very cold.
Going 400 miles an hour on the back of a dragon.
Wrap up warm. You want some mittens. You want a hat. You probably want another layer or two.
Especially when the dragon in front of you does the old dusting of the trees and, you know, launches some snow in your face when you're going a couple hundred miles an hour.
Can you imagine Handsome's little kids? Like, you know, they're trying to integrate into American society. And they're like, before you run out the door, make a hat on your head, you know.
Wasn't what Mo Damashek said.
Well,
we've
established that.
David, get your hat on. You're going to need to wear a hat today. It's cold out there.
That was his Texas time. That was Damashek's time in Texas.
I lived in El Paso for the better part of a decade in my youth, yes.
Have you got your mittens on, Dave? If you want to play wiffle ball with your mates, you must wear a knitted cap. Wiffle ball.
Was there a wiffle version of cricket? Because you can't play. What was it?
Whiff it.
Whiff it is what?
There isn't really.
Because you can't play with that ball and those sticks in the middle of the street like we couldn't with a baseball.
You play with a tennis ball.
So that you would use the actual, with a tennis ball. Yeah. Gotcha. We would do that too with the stick and stuff.
Yeah, what do the young people do besides
wiffle
soccer
changed
there?
The world.
Like for fun, you know, like let's do a pickup when Handsome was allowed out before supper. What did you go?
Soccer would be the thing.
Soccer. That would be it.
Yeah.
I've stumbled upon a million-dollar idea here.
Right.
Right? Because truly, wiffle ball changed our lives. Like when you were kids and you could now have a pitcher throw a ball as hard as he could and it would break and you would get curves and sliders and you could swing a bat as hard as you wanted to in the middle of the street and everything was just miniaturized.
Yep.
Why shouldn't you have that for cricket?
There
for
is
the kids?
There is a version of cricket called quick cricket.
Okay.
Which is played with like a plasticky ball.
Only takes 36 hours to play a game.
There we go. Yeah, I guess there aren't very many pickup games of cricket, are there?
No, there are.
Due to the duration.
Yeah, but not that many.
Yeah. All right. Just spitballing here, trying to line our pockets a little bit of cash.
Exactly.
I know that the subject matter typically is pro football here, but let's talk about another sport. The sport of golf. Matt Money Smith, an accomplished golfer I've been watching for my whole life.
Him.
What's that?
You've been watching
I have not watched specifically.
I like to post videos on YouTube.
I need some punctuation in that.
You're right. I'd like to see. Oh, no, I did see Money swing once on video. It was very nice. You have a nice, easy.
Did I put it on video once?
I think so.
That is, I am described as having an easy swing. That is not a lot of power in this body. It's a small body, so I have to make do with good contact and good form.
Well, it is the breakthrough story. For once, it seems that the headlines, even though at this time of the year, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, it does seem like the draft and all the intrigue surrounding that overwhelms even those. But for at least a couple of days, Tiger Woods, the story, not just in sports, as a matter of fact.
In the world.
It's been covered as one of the top stories in world news that Tiger Woods did it. And I'm going to sound like the biggest curmudgeon in the world when I say this. I wasn't as moved by it as apparently 98% of the rest of the world was. It was fine. I didn't care.
Were you moved when he won in 97? Did it affect you when he won his first major, when he won the Masters?
I thought that was pretty remarkable. Yeah, right. I remember being struck and the dominance of it and everything else. But I guess I'm older than you, but when Nicholas did it in 86, I vividly remember watching that with my old man and the back nine charge. And I knew it meant a lot to the old man, and it meant a lot to see him do it. And it was so exciting. And it was actually, if you put side by side the shots on 16, the par three, the where the ball lands for Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, 30-something years prior, it's almost identical how it runs right up next to the hole and then stops about
that's course knowledge
5 feet short. Yeah, five feet below the hole, and they both put it up.
And that was when
the birdie and the place goes wild.
I think it was 12 that Nicklaus said he knew he was going to win, because you saw both Molinari and Finau come up short, and Nicklaus is like, yeah, that's – you know, if you've played the course as much as we have, you know there's swirling winds down there. And you either take an extra club or you pick a different line, and you know what's going to happen. And those two guys don't know that. But he said as soon as he saw Tiger hit it, stick it, two putt for par, he knew, oh, yeah, he's got this nut cracked. He's figured it out, and he will coast in and win this thing.
Where does this rank for you, Money?
It's way up there.
This is one of the most significant. Obviously, we have to remove our subjective rooting interests. If you can objectively assess these things in your lifetime, where does this rank for you? Let's make our list,
sure,
shall we? Let's cobble it together. Handsome.
Some sports moments.
The greatest moments that don't have to do with, obviously, I would put, you know.
I mean, I think 97
was a Stanley Cup in 91 is
right.
Me.
Yes, I'm saying
I didn't
a collective.
Win this kind of company anyway.
Gosh, it's hard for me to rank them. I just kind of have a,
you got the 80
a bushel
Olympics.
Of great.
You don't
great
remember
moments.
That, do you?
I don't. No.
You don't remember that?
No, it was taped. I mean, I remember waking up, and I think it was in the paper before they played it or something. I remember my old man talking
earlier
about it.
Earlier in the day.
Right. I was like six, I think, when that happened, and I remember it being a big deal. And
I
my
remember
dad freaking out.
Mo Damashek picked me and my chums up from Hebrew school, and we didn't want to go because of the game. And I think you could hear it on the radio, but you couldn't watch it till later in the evening. And she picked us up, and she said, I know what happens in the U.S. versus USSR hockey game. Do you guys want to know? And we debated in the back seat for a minute. We said, okay, go ahead and tell us. And she told us, I think she did it in that dramatic way, too. She said, USSR 3, USA 4. And we screamed in the car, and then we ran home and watched it anyway. That's number one to me. Nicklaus, as I say, in 86 is in my top 4 or 5 at minimum, maybe even higher. And Kirk Gibson's home run. In 88. That was, I'm sure you don't remember that one, Handsome, right?
No, I don't.
Minor, I don't know. I'm just
that
trying to think emotionally. I'm trying to conjure up some memories of emotions. I remember the Lakers come back in game 7 against Portland at the conference finals.
Wow.
Because I was there, you know, and I was just a season ticket holder. I got season tickets to the Lakers in 95. So, you know, that was on their way to their first title, and it looked like it was bust again. You know, they're down whatever it was, 14. And, the seats I had were right next to seats that were always given to the team, the visiting team. So we had these two dudes next to us that were rooting for Portland. And they were kind of, so anyway, we're kind of having fun going back and forth with them. And they're kind of wearing some kind of, you know, like a bandana around their belt loop. And my buddy says, hey, the Lakers are going to win this game. And the guy's like, nah, ain't going to happen. He goes, how about this? They win this game, I take that thing off your belt loop. They lose this game, I give you $100. And the guy's like, I'll take that deal. And when they came back and won, and he had to untie that thing and give it to my buddy, who put it around his head and just looked at him like he was Schneider from the Dukes of Hazzard or something. It was one of the great moments. But that was a remarkable comeback. Tiger in 97.
Boy, I'm surprised by that. That was a great one. I remember Shaq.
Just being there.
In the fourth, that had to be...
Because remember, there was the alley-oop from Kobe to Shaq, and like the whole place just goes crazy. Yeah. I mean, that was just something to be in the
building. That's a pretty iconic moment.
For that. I was at the Rose Bowl in 06 for the Texas comeback, and I was standing on the sideline right next to... They bring the whole media down to the field in the final 3-4 minutes mm-hmm. of the game, because the media is, you know, the press box is so high at the Rose Bowl. So, you know, and they place you. They say, all right, you stand here, you stand here. I happen to be standing right next to the Texas bench when the defense was on the field and Vince Young gathered his team and stands on the bench and delivers this speech of how they're going to win this game. There's just no two ways about it. It was just, it was almost like I was part of this huddle. So to see that comeback take place, just... The breaks that went into it, the lateral from Reggie Bush, the fourth down call with no Lendale White or fullback on the field, the Tings not taking the interception but instead knocking it down, like everything that went into that particular college football game resonates as well.
We're debating what these are. To me, the greatest college football game is Nebraska Miami in the Orange Bowl in 83, Bernie Kosar versus the mighty Cornhuskers with Heisman Trophy winner Mike Rozier, who was hurt, and Jeff Smith comes in and makes on 4th and 10. How about this? 4th and 10, the season, the national championship on the line. It's 4th and 10, and the mighty Huskers are about to lose to the Miami Hurricanes, which obviously they ultimately did anyhow. But on the last possession, Turner Gill throws a strike to Irving Fryer, you know, future Miami Dolphins and Patriots star.
He's on a hiatus. He doesn't
at the goal line all by himself. No one in the picture with him. And it hits him in the hands, and it would have gone down as one of the biggest drops in history. But then on 4th and 10, they run the option. They run the option on 4th and 10, and Turner Gill pitches it to Jeff Smith at the perfect moment, and he takes it down the sideline for, I think, the game for the touchdown that put them down one, and then they go for two. They don't get it. The Canes win it, and still one of the great noble deeds in college football history, the Tom Osborne could have just kicked the extra point. That's what we lack, by the way. That brings me around to that. We don't need both overtime and the two-point conversion. When you have the two-point conversion, what it allows you is those great ethical and sports moral decisions. You know, I don't want to talk.
I don't think it's ethical, but I get your point.
Well, it was because morality went through my head, and I thought that's a little inappropriate when it comes to sports. But there's sports morality.
I was witness to two of them last year.
You should either go for it. Like, it's shameful that Air Parsegian went.
You and I were together in London when Vrabel opted to go for it for Tennessee, and two shots at it, and missed both, and the Chargers were victorious. Then, of course, when Anthony Lynn went for it on Thursday Night Football in Kansas City, and got it, and essentially it was a walk-off. I think there were 5 seconds left in that game. But you're absolutely right. Like, those are going for two, some of the best moments, because it's one play. I mean, it's 60 minutes of sweat and blood, and here it is, 2 yards.
It's a compressed overtime.
Era Parsegian in, I think it was 70, or was it 66, Spaghetti? You're a Notre Dame guy. Do you know that deep into the history? Parsegian's number one with the Irish, and Michigan State, I think, is number two, with Bubba Smith being one of their stars, future star of Police Academy.
Yep.
I have to tell you that, handsome. And
Police Academy.
And he kicks the extra one point when he could have gone for two.
After that.
Like a man. You go for you act like a man when you're in that situation. You go for two.
With the 100%.
Or shame the devil. And by the way, if it's in the last minute of an NFL game and it's regulation, regulation time. You don't kick the extra point to see if maybe in overtime we'll win the toss and maybe the other team won't score a touchdown and maybe we'll get the ball back and maybe it all work out. If you have a good quarterback, which most teams do at this point, you put the faith in him that he's going to win the game on right. one play from 2.5 yards out. I can't imagine in this age of advanced metrics and all that, that hasn't been determined by everybody.
You inherently have the momentum in that situation, and whether you're a believer in momentum or not, you have just scored a touchdown and you have the defense backed up. They probably tried to, you know, spend a while trying to stop you from getting a touchdown. So they're a little more tired than they should be, and now's your opportunity to put the game away rather than give them another 15 minutes.
Hank has not submitted anything yet.
You know what was a good one, too? Ben Johnson. What about when Ben Johnson blew away Carl Lewis? Remember how big the build-up for that was?
I was a big Carl Lewis fan. That's the difference. I loved Carl Lewis.
Really?
I mean, I love the long jump. The fact that he did it all, you know, the fact that he crushed it in the long jump, and he was also a sprinter like that. Carl Lewis was probably my favorite Olympian. Plus, it was in my sweet spot when I was a kid, and I fancied myself a long jumper.
A favorite Olympian.
Right? Well, you know, the earliest Olympian I remember is Bruce Jenner, you know, and I barely, I was a tiny child, or maybe I just remember the legacy of Bruce Jenner.
I remember him on the Wheaties box.
Exactly.
I don't remember him actually doing it.
I think that's what it was. I think he was on the Wheaties box quite a while.
For a long time.
Like 10 years, you still had Bruce Jenner on the Wheaties box. So maybe that's what it was. But yeah, Carl Lewis was kind of like the Olympian of my childhood that everyone really saw. Because what was it, 88 and 84, I think, were Carl Lewis's dominant runs, weren't
That's
they?
Right. So, but 88, when he lines up against Ben Johnson of Canada, now a day or three later, we find out that he's juicing, and so they take the victory away from Ben Johnson. But in the moment, when you were watching that, this was supposed to be some great showdown. Carl Lewis versus Ben Johnson, and Ben Johnson smoked him and everybody else. It was stunning to see him just run away from Carl Lewis and the rest of the fastest people on the face of the earth. Linford Christie, that's right. Yeah, I remember.
Finished third.
How about it, Hank? Come on.
You want mine? Mine would be...
If this is some dumb cricket thing, I don't know what.
It's not dumb. What, I mean, what makes it dumb if it's cricket?
Because...
I listen to your dumb...
But mine wasn't
thing.
Mine wasn't personal. Mine was, I was trying to be objective. This is the biggest moment in
sports. This is objective to people who people who are from the country that I'm in.
Okay, go ahead. I'm interested. I'm interested.
Back from people saying I can't. So I have to.
You're right.
Two. One of them, England and Australia play each other in cricket in a series that's called the Ashes. So this dates back because the first time that Australia ever beat England, there was a fake obituary written for English cricket, and then they burnt the stumps that are used for the game, and the Ashes are what they play for every time of that. England had not won the Ashes since 1986, so they play each other every 2 years. England
be better if it was a human's Ashes. That would be something.
And in 2005, England finally won a series, which obviously took five Test matches, so 5 times 5 days, 25 days worth of cricket, and England finally beat Australia 2-1 in the series. That was genuinely
the score was 2-1 after 25 days.
Exactly. A series win.
And the hell is this thing you watch and participate in?
That's no different to a series.
Yes, it is. It doesn't take a month.
That's great.
Doesn't matter. It was great.
25 days.
I'm all for raising the stakes. What if the loser of this big match, this month-long match, actually was thrown in the incinerator and those became the Ashes going
Now you're talking about serious stakes.
Spaghetti is going to say, here are his contributions, and I know what they are. Let me see if I can guess what they are. Tyree and the Giants beating the undefeated.
He wasn't alive then. Carry on.
That's way up there.
Yeah.
He's going to say the Rangers in 94 as if that mattered.
No.
One of my least favorite things in about that Rangers Cup is when people from New York acted as though there had never been a Stanley Cup until the Rangers won that dumb one against the Vancouver Canucks. Terrific. You finally got over the hump.
How old are you, Eddie?
26.
Maybe too young.
Spaghetti's going to say...
I was thinking Leyritz, but he's too young.
Buster Douglas?
Too young.
I'm going for objective anyway. What was the biggest moment in sports history in our lives in
Scott
the last 50 years?
Oh, that's not, I didn't think that's, I thought you were talking about that. You mentioned how, you know, you felt bad because you weren't feeling it. I thought your question was like, when you watch something happen, you remember your emotions being overwhelmed. Like, oh my gosh.
It's the same.
I can't believe.
Same thing.
No, it's like, hey, I witnessed this. I'm going to tell my, listen, there was this golfer who dominated golf and None of us thought he was ever going to win a tournament again,
let
alone another major.
What's the greatest sporting event you've seen? I think it's the same question, isn't it? It's the same, you know, I would say the 80 Olympics, you know, the U.S. Right. beating the Soviets is still number one after everything that's come after it.
But I think that's why the Rangers Cup doesn't resonate with him. He was too young. You know, you're too, I think you got to be at least probably 8, 9, 10 years old to be able
my
to.
My point about that was a little overrated. People in New York carried on like, I don't know.
That's like one of the biggest deals in New York is like that cup. I'd say the Subway Series, Yankees over Mets, and I guess the first Giants one is probably the ones that people talk about the most. I would say the Rangers, the cup they lost, just from the memories from that whole every series and how the whole, like, you know, all of Staten Island kind of banded together, all the real hockey diehards come out, and like everything is just like, where are you watching the game, like who's coming, like everyone was just together, and you would just become friends like these locals at bars and restaurants because you'd be watching the game like standing at a TV.
That is fun. That is great fun. Wait, the blue shirts are most popular in the most popular borough is Staten Island?
I mean, well, when you get on, like, Brooklyn and Queens, that's more of, like, Islander territory.
Oh, Islanders.
So,
yeah, sense.
And then Jersey, obviously, is where, like, the Devils are. So, and then Manhattan is just too many, like, it's just a mix of people. So Staten Island's a pretty good, strong, Rangers fan base there.
I would imagine, I don't know if Hank was there, but the two of yous were there, being at the Coliseum for Chiefs-Rams Monday night.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, That
was great.
Freaking electric greatest, atmosphere.
Greatest, are we with
awesome regular season game.
Greatest regular season game of all time? What's the, so what is the,
I mean, it's in the conversation, right?
What's the Tiger, so Tiger for you money vaults past Nicklaus in 86 is the greatest golf moment ever.
It's just different. You know, I watched Nicklaus in 86 with my old man and my Uncle Ray was a big Tom Watson fan. And, you know, like, and Norman, of course, was kind of like the bad guy because he was an Aussie. So, like, there's that involved.
And
there's
Sergio
so many emotions.
Was out there, too.
Yeah, so it's just, it's, yeah, I think so. Just because Tiger in 97 was so freaking huge. I mean, it changed golf completely. And to think that we were never going to get to experience that feeling again, and yet here we are, was pretty awesome.
Women's World Cup?
What about Cubs Game 7?
I was already out on the Cubs by then. I'll tell you, though, I think
I'm going global, though. I'm not talking about how it impacts. I'm saying as cool. you look back, if you have to make a list of the 10
you're not
biggest
going global.
Sporting events. I absolutely am.
You definitely aren't, because no one in the rest of the world knows about at least four of the things that you've mentioned.
What are you talking about? Well, how dare you? What's the biggest NFL moment then? The Immaculate Reception. That was a big one. Now, was it the Eagles winning the Super Bowl? Was it, What rivals what we saw from Tiger?
I mean, there's a little bit of recency bias, but if you just think of the exchange between the Patriots and the Seahawks,
at the end of that moment,
that you convert a fourth down, that you have this giant completional on the sideline, you are in place, and it looks like you're going to slay that dragon and win that game. Improbable circumstances, right? And then, oh, no, it's quick slant, and this guy intercepts it. Game over, Tom Brady
solidifies the
dynastic run.
And obviously, its meaning.
Because they had lost. They had not won in like 10 years.
It elevates the Patriots, and it ends a would-be dynasty in the Seahawks.
There's so many of those recently in Super Bowls for the NFL.
Yeah, Atlanta, like close Patriots.
The Atlanta finish. I mean, the one, if you really want to go global.
Over George
right.
If you really want to go global.
10.
The Champions League final between Manchester United and Bayern Munich, which I think was probably 98 or 99. Manchester United was down 1-0 and scored two goals to win it after the 90th minute of the game.
In extra time,
I think 91st and 94th minute, they scored two goals and won the game for the Champions League final. And that year then had won the Premier League, the FA Cup, and the Champions League. And that finish is... I think thought of as one of the best soccer finishes.
I'll say this.
Relegation.
But I know it's global. You know,
ice
hockey should be in there as well.
Not global.
It was the Olympics. What are you talking about? What's more global than the Olympics?
And the Cold War.
But ice
remember,
hockey.
It was the Cold War.
Yeah.
It was USSR versus the good old US of A. Yeah. I'll say this. I think for the United States, you could make a compelling case that the greatest sports moment in all of sporting history would have been had Gordon Hayward hit that half-court shot.
Wow.
A half-court shot at the buzzer. Tiny little Butler from Hinkle Fieldhouse knocks off the dragon that is Duke. You know, the blue blood of blue bloods over the last 30 years in college basketball. And the Butler Bulldogs, on a half-court shot at the buzzer, win the college basketball national championship.
Well, if we're gonna what if and change a play, people often forget, but I think people are kind of more tuned in than they were even in the days right after the Giants beat the Patriots for the first time and ended the undefeated season. Right after the Plexico touchdown, there's still a little bit of time left, and Brady uncorks the longest pass he's ever thrown in his life, and Randy Moss reaches out for it at about the Giants' 15-yard line, and he's just behind a couple of Giants defenders, and Randy Moss just barely can't get to it. If
that would have connected for a perfect season.
Tom Brady hits Randy Moss on the all-time Hail Mary, and Randy Moss does that to complete the undefeated season. I think that would be the biggest. But and then this predates us, but I would assume Ali Frazier. There could not be anything bigger than that.
Right. I guess there are boxing moments from
I said
from
Buster Douglas.
From our past.
Right. I think that would be the biggest one there. Sugar Ray was humongous.
Just the fact that Buster happened to Japan, nobody cared, no one was paying attention. It was a news item. Nobody watched it. You just heard the breaking news and you were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What happened? I think that's the only problem with the Buster Douglas.
Mayweather McGregor had a lot of buzz. In terms of event watching, it wasn't the greatest spectacle, but in terms of buzz and being a global event.
I'm not talking, but that after the fact, the hype before what rose to that and exceeded it. I guess the Tiger thing. I don't know. I just feel I feel dead inside
golf.
That I'm not that I've loved watching there.
But I mean, you used to probably watch a lot of golf, you know, with your old man. Like now, because Tiger hasn't been as dominant, maybe people aren't paying as close attention. They don't really care about who's, is Justin Rose is the world number one. But what about Dustin Johnson, who might be able to take it away from nobody cares? You know, people care about Tiger. So I think had Tiger, I think now this could actually set up for, like, let's say, you know, the next two majors are Bethpage Black and for the PGA and the U.S. Open at Pebble. I mean, both places where he's won. What if Tiger goes into the Open Championship to complete the season-long Grand Slam? I mean, if he wins at Bethpage, which probably won't happen, it's too long of a course, I think for him to, let's just say he does it. I mean, if that happens, now you're talking about perhaps, you know, one of the greatest moments in history. If he goes to the freaking Open Championship, and ends up winning there. I think it's in Scotland this year, if I remember right. So that would be something.
I hope we've been comprehensive, if nothing else.
I feel like we've just been spitballing.
I know. We are spitballing. Spaghetti.
Scatterbrain.
Give that half-hour conversation a grade. Was it too all over the place?
No. I'm going to tell you, I think our fans who love this group, they're going to eat this up. I really honestly believe that.
What about the Bills rally against the Oilers? That'd be top 20, right?
Great. I remember watching that in real time and freaking out in disbelief. That's a great one.
I just want to make sure.
I would say,
there's not
Olympics,
like, you left off, blah.
If we're talking Olympics, Usain Bolt breaking the 100-meter record again, like, that's that same deal. I get your point on Ben Johnson because he was like,
when he's pointing
planet,
and he's coming across,
Usain Bolt like,
that was unreal.
Stopped running three strides short and is already celebrating winning and breaking the world record. That's one of those. I mean, it's not, I don't feel passionate about it, but it's definitely an indelible moment of like sporting brilliance.
Mm. So, bottom line, the biggest ever was Lemieux and company in Chicago Stadium completing the sweep over the Hawks in 92. I was there for that one, too.
Sure.
No? Okay. Let's move along then and tackle another subject here. Let's talk a little three here. Russell Wilson. And let's make it our Zaxville's hot take of the week, presented by Zaxby's Famous Fingers, Wings, and Salads. And like I started to say earlier, we'll be out in Nashville, Tennessee, and we're going to be doing a show early in the week from a Zaxby's. Do you know which one it is, Spaghetti, to plant the seed early here?
Yes, we actually do have the location of it. It's a Tuesday. I believe it's a 3 o'clock show. It's 1902 Charlotte Avenue. Nashville,
prime
Tennessee.
Eating hours, 3 p.m.
Dave, would you call that a live studio audience?
Yeah.
And guess what? We're going to be joined by Rashawn Evans of the Tennessee Titans.
Say that again?
Rashawn Evans.
Okay.
Rashawn Evans.
Are you excited to eat the Zaxby's? I had a our friend Sully. I actually asked him about it this past weekend of what.
There's an expert.
He knows. He's from Tennessee. I was like, "What do you order there?" And he gave me the whole rundown of the menu. He's like, "The sandwiches are great. Salads are great." He's like, "But the wings and the fingers and all the different dipping sauces is like what you go for." So
that's what Nate Bargadze, need to accentuate his name because he has a Z in it. Told us as well. He said that
the fingers and the dippings.
Yeah. That's what we're going to be
doing. And that's easy eating if you're doing a show.
Yeah.
You know, finger food.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I also want to work the drive-through window a little bit. I think it'll be neat for the locals if Rashawn Evans and I work the drive, not as much Damashek, but Evans probably. Imagine you place your order. I'll take some wings and a salad, and then it's Rashawn Evans who hands you off your food.
That'd be cool.
That'd be fun.
I'd like to see you work the deep fryer.
Yeah.
I'd like to put you. I'd like to put you right there. Right there on the deep. I want
to
see.
You have to work his way up.
Here we go with our Zaxville's hot takes. Handsome and I kind of had this conversation, or we started it last week, Money. I want to get your expert insight on this. A lot of the cynics out there, vapid cynics who populate the 21st century, as I say, lousy with vapid cynicism, and it is part of the downfall of society, perhaps. But let's reclaim it a little bit here. Russell Wilson is worthy of a big contract. Obviously, there's inflation year to year. Kirk Cousins informed what the Seahawks had to do, and now other teams with a franchise QB are going to have to match or exceed what Russell Wilson has now gotten. Anywho, all this pushback, Russell Wilson, why would you give him that money? He's a second-tier QB. Money, let's go around here. Who would you rather have than Russell Wilson for the next 5 years?
Next 5 years.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Is that too long?
That's how long his contract is.
Yeah, that's his contract. That's fine.
5 years.
It makes sense.
Yeah, so I think...
Give me a QB for 5 years who would be better.
I think I'll take... Well, do I get coached too? Do I get to take that? Okay, because then I'll take Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid for the next five years.
Interesting.
That is one of
them. Mahomes is definitely top of that list.
I am already starting. We'll see what happens with Tyreek Hill. Obviously, that's a major factor. And I would suspect that Andy Reid and company are looking at Hollywood Brown, too, as a replacement there. But
it's just outside the window for Rodgers.
Yeah, five years.
If there were three, I'd go Rodgers. But five, I think, is probably just a little.
You know what's funny? You talk about being a prisoner of the moment. I don't know if Deshaun Watson would have performed a little bit better in that wild card game at home against the Colts, but the Colts happen to have a really good defense, or they did last year, and probably is going to be even better this year. Deshaun Watson, that's your most recent memory, and so you think, Deshaun Watson doesn't belong in the conversation, but Deshaun Watson maybe. I just haven't seen enough.
I think we've seen enough from Mahomes.
I'm floating one out there.
I'd add Andy Luck.
I think
where you're going is we haven't seen recent. Last year was good. 2 years of nothing.
I think he's the only other one.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone else you could go with for the next five. I'm looking at it. I think Andy Luck is it's it. And it's whether or not you believe he'll hold up. How concerned are you about that shoulder?
I will go. My choice remains the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. Ben Aaron Rodgers.
Here it comes.
No, Aaron Rodgers.
You think
would be my
Aaron Rodgers 5 years, for year four and five is as good as Russell Wilson will be?
I think Aaron Rodgers has done a pretty good job in the last week or two of managing
playing 4 or 5 years from now.
That's what everybody says about every QB. You can't envision a guy getting past 40, but more and more it's.
I know, but I don't think he necessarily.
I know, but Tom Brady said, Tom Brady 8-10 years ago was like, I won't be playing. And then, you know, we saw a change when he saw the end of the, when he saw the finish line closer than he expected. He's, 45 now. Aaron Rodgers will do that too.
But I don't know if Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady lives, breathes for football. I don't think Aaron Rodgers necessarily is the same way. I don't think they're built the same.
I will say this about Aaron Rodgers. We're overthinking it a little bit. Aaron Rodgers did a good job of managing the Mike McCarthy fallout. And do they dislike each other and all that kind of stuff? The bottom line is Aaron Rodgers didn't like, whether or not they liked each other on a personal level and went to Zaxby's and had wings together, I don't know. But I do think that he wasn't a fan of what Mike McCarthy wanted to do from an offensive philosophy standpoint. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be liberated this year. I bet you that team is dynamite, and I think the defense is going to be good too. Anyway, Beware the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually because he just turned 35. So it'd be 35 through 39.
Yeah, but is he going to four and five?
To me, that's just
better than Russell Wilson at 34 and 35.
I think that's less celebrating Aaron Rodgers and more of a shot at Russell Wilson to take Rodgers. Like, yeah, I'm gonna take the guy that, you know, is going year 35 through 39 over someone who's just entering his prime, has proven he can play behind a makeshift O-line that is not good and still put up an MVP caliber season and guide a team that many picked was going to be worst in the league. I mean, there were those that thought they would have the number one overall pick. And because Three's back there, you know, making everything okay when it all breaks down.
I know, but age aside, but by the way, you don't know that Russell Wilson, the older he gets, is going to still be as nimble, getting outside the pocket and everything else. There's little evidence that a guy keeps doing it. Fran Tarkenton is the only guy I can think of
who's old and
still running around in circles.
The thing about Russell is I've never seen him take a clean shot.
That's right.
So right, I've never seen anything like it. Yep. I mean, it is remarkable, and it's not like he's running out of bounds on every run. No, he is.
he just knows how to
deflect contact. It's remarkable.
It's one of the more mystifying things that I love to point to.
It's Floyd Mayweather-esque. Like, there's never a clean shot.
And Colin Kaepernick was another one. He never got lit up out there, whereas Mike Vick, RG3, got blown up continually in that
Lamar Jackson this past year toward the end started getting squared up a little bit.
Yeah, he's not. Spaghetti, they've left off one name. They've left off a big name here. Who would it be? 5 years you get to have this QB.
I have a list here. Want me to rattle them off?
I've got one.
I have
more.
I'll add mine.
I've got one more. You add yours.
I'll add mine. I'll go this just. I actually would have taken Mahomes or Luck, but Baker Mayfield.
That's the one I was waiting for there. I thought he'd been kissed into greatness already, right?
Want to try this list exercise?
Who does Hank have? Hank's got one more.
I've got one more, but again, this is only if age doesn't matter. And you're both going to laugh me off the stage for this one. But Trevor Lawrence, based on his one season in college football last year, 5 years from now, would I rather have him or Russell?
Well, no, it was the next 5 years.
The next 5 years.
So I get a backup quarterback for the next two.
Okay, no, his clock starts. We'll mess with the space-time continuum. You get the next five from Russell Wilson. Or you get Trevor Lisson when he lands in the NFL. Well, the thing is with that is, and that's the other conversation, obviously, that we've had ad nauseum over the last couple of months, is that, you know, as the Ohio State kid, Dwayne Haskins moves out, and now the new kid that's in there that's apparently going to be better than Dwayne Haskins was, this is more evidence. We are here now. QB saturation. You needn't obsess about who's going to be our quarterback in 3 years. Nah, they're all in the pipeline. They're better young talent out there at the age of 15 or 18 or 20 right now, populating high school and college football. It's the concern about how are we going to get somebody who's halfway decent to go under center for our team. I don't think that's a concern that it will be had 5 years from now, a decade from now. Everybody already just about has a decent QB besides your team, your former team, or your future team.
Yeah, but they'll have Tua next year.
Right. Or Trevor Lawrence.
That's what I'm saying.
From now.
Right. But I would assume based on what they've done with that roster.
And DC has Case Keenum, and that's about like
they're going for Tua.
The goal.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, so everybody's going to have a halfway decent QB. Baker Mayfield, though, is an interesting one, Spaghetti.
Which of these names, if they have a good year this year, will be in that Luck, Mahomes, Russell Wilson group?
I'll Baker
just
Mayfield.
Rattle them off. Darnold, Wentz, Kyler, Jimmy G, or Cam Newton? Or any of those guys would you want in the next 5 years?
No bigger supporter of the deeds of Cam Newton. I always say if he lasts one more year now, I think he's done 9 years or maybe eight, whatever it is. If he just makes it to 10, if he makes the magic number of 10, he's definitely going to the Hall of Fame. And I love when people argue with me about that, but
I think he needs to
going to the Hall of Fame.
No, I think he needs to. I mean, I love him as well, but I think he needs to have a season like he had whatever it is now.
His MVP 3 years season.
I mean, he can't throw 38 interceptions in a season or anything, but I'm saying if he basically toes the line that he's established in the first 8 or 9 years of his career, he's going to the Hall of Fame. It will be impossible to look back 5 years after he hangs it up and see his rushing numbers and his touchdown totals and the team success under him and his MVP.
The more
and
quarterbacks
all that
are like him, the more that Russell Wilson's and Deshaun Watson's come through and who are all putting up those type of numbers, his 5 years after he's retired, his numbers might not
never
look
been
as special.
Anything like might any, not, the closest thing that hadn't the closest been. Thing to Cam Newton would have been first 2/3 of John Elway's career. I think that's the best
Steve
comp
Young.
You can make.
But is Steve Young?
No. Steve Young was too slight. He doesn't hold up with those guys. Elway's a big dude. But Cam Newton's
way,
way bigger.
It's not what they look like. I mean, you're talking about
just the rushing
just
touchdown
talking about
numbers,
the ability sort of. To. I'm talking about the ability to not shy from. Yeah, yeah. You know, these are big fellas that had rocket arms and, you know, could burn you on 3rd and 11, you know, and break your heart as a defense.
That's a tough one. I'm just thinking of the voting panel. That's kind of where I think you're right. I mean, someone who played quarterback different than anybody else, changed the position and was, you know, to me, you talk to defensive coordinators that had the game plan against him. And they're like, it was a nightmare. It's a complete nightmare to try to figure out what we were going to do going into a game against that guy. And I think that's, you know, your Hall of Fame resume, right? Your credentials. I'm just thinking of the guy.
And by the way, it's now that I've
those interception numbers,
I didn't calculate
totals.
It, but that's exactly right. That's exactly the knocks you would put against John Elway is, well, he had to pull off all those fourth quarter rallies because he put his team behind the eight ball with lousy picks along the way and the gunslinging and all that. And okay, right. But still winning more than he's losing, and he's still taking his team to the playoffs most years. And when he gets there, you know, he had the one magic. I mean, again, 15-1. But anyway, the conversation's not about Cam, and I wouldn't take him going forward because of the health concerns. I wouldn't roll right. the dice on that at this point. But I obviously am a big
to me. I mean, Russell Wilson will be one of the three best quarterbacks in the league over the next 5 years.
Yeah,
I believe
exactly.
that every single year. I think you would say, man. That guy's in the MVP. I think he is in the MVP conversation every single year for the next 5 years.
So who's the guy that gets the next contract that will knock him off the number one list? Because Mahomes is probably 2 or 3 years
away
from getting his. Oh, so someone and
the
someone
next,
else
the big
is
name
gonna,
coming up is Goff, and the other one happening. Is
Goff
Wentz.
And Wentz.
I don't think
Goff is getting it, and I don't think Wentz is probably getting it, barring
because
a,
they're
a huge
get,
year this year.
I mean, it's different because Russell was a 3rd-round pick, but they're going to get the contract that Russell got. You know, that's why, you know, it's hard to fault the guy. Well, you should be taking less, you know, to help the team. And it's like, no, this is his first big one. Right. You know, the last one he got was, I don't know what it was, like $80 million, you know, like a lot of money, but it was like $30 million guaranteed, $80 million. This is his first big contract. So I think for Goff and Wentz, that'll be the timeline there on. It's like, no, this is the way this works. You get this one, and then you get the big one.
So Cam's contract, we're talking Cam, is up in 21. So he'd Andrew Luck in 22.
There you go. I think that might
so
be
So one
it.
Of those two, I guess, is going to get a deal in the next 18 months that could
potentially it would probably be the Andrew Luck contract.
Yep. Well, you know, by the way, something else that occurs to me, and by the way,
Ben Roethlisberger,
later in the week,
of course, could.
Later in the week, we have Lance Zierlein coming in here, draft guru, one of many draft gurus around these parts, and he's going to this is a question we got to ask him, but I'll ask it to you now. Unless everybody has misread the situation, or, you know, the vast majority of people who do it for a living in assessing QBs. When it was Peyton versus Ryan Leaf, there was some buzz for Leaf, but by the end of it, it was pretty clear cut. I think 3 out of 4 people would have said Peyton, right? Over Ryan Leaf, at least. Same thing with Jameis and Mariota. I feel like everybody settled on Jameis as the better, and I guess that's been kind of a wash. Andrew Luck versus RG3. Everybody settled on Luck, and that worked out. Everybody decided that last year Baker Mayfield was the clear-cut guy. And then at the last minute, Baker snuck in there.
Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold.
Everybody was Sam Darnold,
Sam
and
Darnold.
Then Baker
Sam
snuck
Darnold.
In.
Everybody was Sam, and then Baker snuck in there, and did the Browns do the right thing? Did they just blow this? And it looks like they were ingenious so far, but isn't Baker Mayfield the X factor? I'm Sam Darnold. I keep calling him Baker Mayfield. Isn't Sam Darnold the X factor here? Isn't he, unless all the scouts were wrong and he isn't dynamite, generationally good, shouldn't the Jets be a scary team in 2019?
Not with the head coach.
No. Boy, you're still bitter.
I'm not bitter. He showed his true character. The guy is not the offensive genius that he set himself up to be because he coached Peyton Manning.
All right. I don't want to hold anybody up any longer. Let's talk about a couple of things quickly here. First of all, the great success, the debut last week. Mm. And if you guys are up for it, I would love for you to do another one on the second podcast this week. I'm talking, of course, about Eddie Spaghetti and Handsome Hank's launch of ThickCast.
The ThickCast. I think. Is it Eddie? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the ThickCast.
There's a "the" in front of it if they want to search for it.
Yeah, if you're Googling.
We can chop it right now if we want. I mean, we're on the fly.
You're the expert. You're the kingmaker.
Well, the ThickCast is, as just for now, is going to be at the back end of DDFP.
Right.
But I imagine in short order. That it will.
We'll get picked up by one of the networks.
I would think so. Yeah. I would
maybe
like
a brief synopsis for those listening that are interested in.
It's all about food.
How to get heavy. And
how to thicken up.
How to keep thick.
It's a food podcast.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Loosely speaking.
Yeah. Food, lifestyle, culture.
I'd like to give you guys a gift, as a matter of fact. We've had a lot of fun with, Ross Tucker and Jeff Schwartz and Sean O'Hara and Baldy doing the food block get sizable offensive lineman guys to weigh in on something they would know about food. You can take the food block. If you want the food block, you can have it. I'm not sure we need it, honestly.
But
no, I don't think you need it. Yeah. No. Just trying to jazz it up a little.
You guys mixing in some, like, you know, doing supersets and hammer strength, and this is how I'm building the quads.
This is all about. Eddie was nodding his head.
Yes,
I've been trying. I've been trying. Yeah. I went to the Dodgers game last night. Did not touch any adult beverages. No wieners. Like nothing like that.
But you just walked the stairs, right? You just walked from
no escalator
field level to top of the world.
You're building a brand, Spaghetti. What are you trying to do? You got to eat the wieners.
It's a balance.
All right.
Huh. I'm confused by this ThickCast.
Very strange. I encourage you to go back and listen to the debut last week, and perhaps we'll have episode number two. Speaking of sitting in between episodes one and two, quickly, any thoughts that you need to share, what you think's going to happen going forward here? We began our Game of Thrones conversation. By the way, shout out to Chris Long, who...
Oh, my goodness.
For his... Yeah,
Sports
very funny.
Illustrated.
Yeah, writing a
the best thing
a weekly...
that's been on their platform, magazine or digital, for a decade or so.
Good for him, but
that's going to upset a lot of people.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean,
either way, handsome. Right. Any thoughts on what we saw? You expect some blood and guts in episode two here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Game of Thrones has made I guess at this point. The first few seasons, things kind of moved along at a relatively slow pace, but there was always like that one setup episode at the beginning of a season to tell you, here's where everyone is, set expectations. What we've now got to is this weird dichotomy of we're going to slowly tell you everything that's happening, but also people are able to move around the world or the pretend world at an incredible pace.
I don't care for Euron leaving at the end in the finale of last season.
What world is this, by the way, that they're moving around?
Westeros.
Right. So maybe it's a tiny globe.
Tiny world.
And it's like a Pangea, you know? It's a supercontinent on a tiny bulb. So maybe in Earth perspective, they're moving around the world.
Will Brinson pointed that out as well.
I think of it, I mean, that, you know, obviously that's the way I'm conditioned to think, but I think of it as the Mediterranean, basically. Like, you know, the Mediterranean is what splits these countries.
Will Brinson from CBS said exactly that. He said it wouldn't take 8 weeks. How long would it take you to go from Naples to Ireland and back? 8 weeks, you know? That makes sense.
If that took you 8 weeks, you got lost.
As my boss told us when he insisted we talk about it on our radio show, listen, guys, I know it's a period piece and you guys don't want to deal with that. It's not a period piece. I know they don't have guns and RPGs, but it's fantasy, boss. It's not a period piece.
Someone did refer to it as medieval.
Yes.
That's not what medieval means.
No. We'll talk about it, but what period? The Dark Ages? Bronze Age? What are we going for here? And I think a lot of people kind of, in their mind's eye, that's sort of what they're envisioning, right?
It could be the future.
60 Minutes. Who said that? I don't remember which character. They said it's loosely based on the War of the Roses. So I guess that does line up.
Sets up that. My man,
who would be
a period piece?
Who would be money? Let's go around. Who would devastate you to see die. Because people are going to start dying here. I'm surprised there was not a single death in episode
one. I'll tell you.
What's going to be like, not her or him. Who's going to be the one? And there's a decent chance that anybody you say is going to fall under the axe.
Arya Stark.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she's with a sweet little girl.
Yeah.
And she's going to die.
And she's probably going to die.
Who's the eunuch?
What if she turns bad, though?
You don't want the eunuch to die.
Yeah, I like that guy. Yeah, the bald guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Varys.
Varys. I like that dude.
Wait a second, though. What if Arya turns bad? What if she
turns into a White Walker?
What if she turns zombie?
Oh, and it's her and Jon Snow in the final battle. Arya with a needle.
Why does spaghetti, you say no to that?
You get to look at context clues. They're building, Gendry's building her a new, a new super weapon.
Oh, that's right. Hold on. Let me get the Twitter here real quick.
She has the...
So what? So why couldn't that... Why does that...
It's like a dragon glass harpoon she's going to go after.
She's going to be well-armed.
Yeah, she's not going to...
If she goes down, she's going down on the good side.
Much like Dinklage, Tyrion, right? Yeah. You think you're so clever. They're setting you up. They're just setting you up, spaghetti. That's what they're doing. They're like, oh, she's going to have this sweet weapon. Well, maybe she gets drunk and it fires and just shoots her right in the neck and now she's dead.
My simple-minded hypothesis is that Tyrion can't win. He has to die because it's too similar to The Hobbit in Lord of the Rings.
He's definitely not going to win, but his position is he's not going to be the guy that's sitting on the throne at the end.
He's always going
to
be
the helper to someone who is. That's what he's done the whole way through. There's no reason to believe.
Suddenly, doesn't the Mother of Dragons have to die?
Hold on.
I think she will.
Wait, here we go. This is where I'm going to interject with a Edward L. Murphy tweet because this is my favorite one. I need to know more about Cersei's pregnancy, Arya's super weapon, and when they do a full reveal that Jon will have to kill Dany. that's where he's going.
That's where,
he's setting it up for us.
Episode two, that's what I want.
Eddie, can you explain why this has to happen? As soon as episode two, there's
no way.
With a six episode season, they're going to be killing off Dany in episode two.
4 to 6 is where you're going to have the Jon versus Dany kind
of. So your theory then presumes that the White Walkers, who've been set up since episode one as like, this is the ultimate beast, they're going to be wiped out by episode three.
I'd say...
All a diversion, and 4 through 6 is going to be about...
By the beginning of 4, it'll be like the aftermath of the Battle of Winterfell.
I can't believe that's going to be the way it goes.
Because they're going to show you the ultimate... The real story is like the Game of Thrones, like the throne, and Cersei, and she has the Golden Company down in King's Landing, and then there's going to be a battle in the Trident where Rhaegar Targaryen died, the father.
I don't know what any of this means.
It's significant. They're going to have a battle there.
What is the Trident? I don't even know where you are anymore.
It's an area.
Have a look at the map.
That's where Robert's...
King learn about how to hang body parts in that manner, too?
He was doing that in episode one.
Was he?
Isn't that what they found on the ground somewhere?
It's a Children of the Forest thing. That's like their symbol.
Who's the Children of the Forest?
They're the ones who created the Night King.
Did they do that?
I'm not sure of the answer.
I think it was an accident.
Who's the Night King? The guy with the blue eyes? The zombie guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure.
You can make fun money, but I don't know. But Handsome and I legitimately struggle with what's going on.
I do too. Not kidding. Like, I saw that wacky thing, that serial killer looking spiral, and he says Children of the Forest. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought it was the zombies
Now it's the movie 7?
They're intertwined in a way, because like the Children of the Forest were around where the First Men were around. The First Men, the guy who's the Night King is probably a Stark, an original Stark from way back. They created him.
Here's my real prediction, because it's all about how Bran gets into the head of people. He must inhabit the Night King to be defeated. And so he will do that, but he can't leave the Night King. I don't know the properties of when he is in somebody's head, but if the person whose head he's in dies, does he die?
People do think that he's connected to the Night King in some way because of the Stark blood.
I think Snow has to kill Night King while Bran's in his head, and he will make himself... He'll sacrifice himself like Kenobi on the original Death Star. He'll just lower his blade. You know, you strike me down now, I should become more powerful. But you get the larger point. Right. The Night King's going to have a thing.
Can I ask a more important question?
And then he'll die, and Jon Snow will win, but he'll feel sad that he killed his brother.
Listen, enough of this. What might happen? I want to ask Eddie something that did happen. I know it's a period piece. How did Lannister become like a jet black haired kind of weirdo looking guy?
Jamie, when he showed up.
And yeah, he showed up and he looks at Bran and he's like, I know that kid. I shoved him out the window when I was having incestual relations with my sister. And Bran looks at him and he's like, I know you, dude, even though you got that wacky black hair now. He was a blonde.
I wonder.
What are they doing? Crushing up charcoal and dyeing their hair?
He had to escape from Cersei's lot because he essentially is a traitor, and then make his way. He's wearing that hood over his head. He didn't want to be.
But
seen.
He was a blonde.
Yeah, but
he's got black hair.
Look at Dave Damashek. There's ways you can dye your hair.
I don't understand why you say that. Look at my hair. I am vain enough that I fill in my flesh yarmulke on the back of my head.
Yeah, that's just the back. There's two different
things. If I'm that vain, why wouldn't I? Would I dye my hair and then lie to you about it? Look at me. Look at my beard.
That's exactly what someone who dyes their hair would do.
Look at this. Look at my temples. There's gray there.
There's no gray there.
Yeah, a little bit of gray.
All right. A little bit of salt and pepper. Talk about vapid cynicism.
It's just weird. Why you didn't have him dye his hair? Like anybody dyes their hair.
The other thing is too, everybody we've seen almost everybody exposed as at best amoral, except for Jon Snow. And that's a bad thing, usually. That was the
Messiah dies.
Long established rule that if you are a person of honor, you cannot win by definition, except that it does kind of come full circle if Ned dies and Arya. It's got to be either Arya or Jon Snow if it's one of those people.
Arya's not going to sit on the throne either.
If it's Stark, it's got to be one of those
people that can win.
It cannot be Mother of Dragons.
It's not. It can be.
She's too powerful. She's a Jesus figure, and you cannot have her. That'd be too
easy. There are only some people that are eligible. It's like talking about teams that could make the playoffs or teams that could win the Super Bowl.
Can't be the Kingslayer.
It can't be the Kingslayer.
It can't be because he's a bad guy. Because he sleeps with his sister and he pushed Bran out of a window.
Doesn't matter. The Night King. The Night King is
what he created.
The Night King is a possibility.
Sees the future now.
The Night King's a possibility.
The Night King is not a possibility.
Yes, he is. He could win this. He could win this. What do you mean?
What is unless the producer sat around and said, you want to give a real dark message to society in the 21st
century? And you think that hasn't been the MO
the
whole
way through this show? You keep giving
in
to your lesser angels. This is where we're going to wind up. Now, pay attention, world. Don't wind up like the Seven Kingdoms. That's the old. Unless they want to issue that grim message.
What if it's just Tarantino-esque and like the dragons just go rogue, just burn everything. Everything just burns and they just kind of fly off. Like, that was pretty sweet.
I could see everyone dying, and the answer at the end is like, here's an empty throne. Who's going to win it? You like it could be just the guy who finds it.
Spaghetti, your theory is that the whole thing gets burned to the ground.
King's Landing is going to get burned down by the wildfire underneath the city. That's 100% going to happen.
I think that's kind of right. I think you're halfway home, handsome. The Night King will. Chaos will rule.
Chaos. Isn't that
a
line
about world.
Chaos?
It's a new world kind of optimistic chaos.
I don't know what that means.
Look at all the trouble that this has caused. Let's wash it all away and start fresh together.
I don't think
that's how it'll be.
Night King is not making it that far south. He's gonna die in the Battle of Dawn.
If the Night King dies that early, I'll be so disappointed.
At the end of episode three, I mean, it's an hour. It's an 80-minute episode. Jamie,
how do you know this?
I know everything. Jamie's gonna kill him.
He's our Bran.
Jamie's gonna kill the Night King.
He's the Kingslayer.
He only got one hand.
It's coming full circle. Kingslayer. He stabbed the first Mad King in the back. And he's gonna kill the Night King. And
he's got a dragon that shoots lasers out of its eyes.
I think Jamie's gonna die. But I think
he's
gonna do it. And then Arya's gonna have to take his face, and then she's gonna have to ultimately kill Cersei.
Take whose face?
That's good, Jamie. I want Arya to kill Cersei. That is the one that we need to happen.
Yeah, she ain't gonna blow up with the wildfire. She's gonna get her heart cut out.
She needs to die.
Like that baby will get carved out of her stomach that was just planted and thrown at her or something.
Honey.
Or maybe the
Game of Thrones, man. That's the way these things work.
Maybe the mean dragon will kill her. Matricide.
I would just like
kill her. Whatever. Yeah. Matricide, and then the other two dragons who we know are on Team Danny will kill her.
Oh, yeah.
We'll kill the dragon for being mean. You know?
Maybe. That could happen.
You killed our mom.
Or maybe, what's his name? Greyjoy.
Wacky Greyjoy.
Wacky Greyjoy.
Who? Theon?
Euron.
Oh.
You know, who's been.
That'd be entertaining. He'd be an entertaining king. I kind of like that guy.
Euron, yeah. Yeah,
he's unpredictable.
Yeah, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
And right? Theon is his brother?
Correct. And is a nephew. There's a third brother too.
Cousin.
Victarion, who's not in the show.
Son, brother, or nephew? Cousin.
No, they're all
what in hell's gonna happen brothers. With all this?
They're not brothers.
Yeah, and Balon's their
Euron
father. Euron, Victarion, and Theon are a brother. They're all brothers.
What?
Yeah. But he was banished.
No.
Oh yeah, he was raised by the Starks.
I thought he was his
Theon
uncle.
Theon was raised by the Starks.
Wait, I thought the girl was his sister.
Yeah, Yara. Huh?
She's his sister. I thought she's Theon's sister. Is she Euron's sister as well?
Correct, yeah.
I think you may need to check
the last episode.
Eddie.
They talked when they were sitting down when she was tied up.
Is it okay if I grade this portion of the Damashek podcast instead of Eddie? I give it a D.
What? One more, though.
D for damn confusing.
One more. One more.
Yep.
The Hound, the Mountain. Here's another prediction.
That's happening.
Neither of them are going to be the king.
Okay, I agree with that. I think that the Mountain. We're so eager to see the Hound kill his brother, but we're not going to get to see that. It's going to be the Mountain killing the Hound. But Arya will kill the Mountain.
No, you know who's going to kill him?
I just told you.
The big lady.
Brienne. I can see
that. The big lady.
I think her full arc is that she'll become the Queen's Guard after it's over.
After it's
when Sansa's on the throne or whatever's left, she'll be the...
Look at him just slip that one in there.
Yeah.
I got one.
I don't think Sansa
by the way, back to where we started this whole mess, I do think that some percentage of these people are going to become dead people. They're going to become mean and get the blue eyes and go...
So. Mm.
It's gotta be
some, maybe like Tormund or Beric, maybe is somebody's most, but I don't. It's not gonna be that big.
If I knew who those were, I would say, Tormund is the red guy.
Yeah,
and Beric.
Beric is the flaming sword.
I really hope Tormund gets his.
I like that dude.
I like him very much.
I like that dude. That flaming sword thing's
cool. That's
cool.
Very cool.
And an eye patch, no less.
Yeah. And he's got
a voice. He should
got a voice on Matt Money Smith's level. He's got some voice.
I like that dude.
I just like for him to come in here. And you do a great job as our brand spaghetti, but I just wish you could sound like that guy when you do it. I see that Brienne of Tarth will... That would make it sing a little bit.
Now, he can die and just come right back to life is the deal? Or
this is his last time.
Oh, he's like a cat.
Because he
doesn't have his magician.
He brought back Thoris of Myr. Yeah, if he dies,
his magician's dead.
What the hell?
He revived.
This show would be great if
Jon Snow.
Even better if I understood it.
He said that if he does it again, he's like totally done. He's done it like 100 times already.
He's like a cat.
Yeah,
I'm number 9.
All right.
I still like him, and I hate cats.
Me too.
But I like that guy.
I hate golf as well.
Hate golf?
Yeah,
a lot of people
you don't
do.
Like golf either.
I really don't.
It's interesting because
you like
cricket.
Anything
and
English
that too is a slow sport.
Yeah, cricket and you like the only things you like from your homeland. Cricket,
crumpets,
chocolates, and
crisps.
And crisps.
It all begins with C.
Oh.
What are crisps?
Chips.
Potato chips.
I like crisps too.
Yeah.
All right, listen. I think we've covered it all. Oh, yeah, what we didn't get to is Spaghetti on his famous outline rundowns here did list right near the top there. NFL schedule release on Wednesday. Does it matter?
I just think people just do predictions too early, and ultimately, like, we don't know until...
Logistically, it does for me. I would like to know where I'm going when.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, travel. Yeah, that makes sense.
I can tell you one of them.
You can?
Do you know?
You know the week?
Do you know the schedule already?
You know, the week we're going to Mexico City, head of international. When am I going?
Yeah, that doesn't...
Oh, because of...
What will I celebrate?
Oh, to Mexico City, right. Mm-hmm. Money.
Could I be fortunate enough to celebrate Thanksgiving evening in Mexico City with the Kansas City Chiefs? That would be something.
Ooh la and la. Oh, he's looking at it right now. We're finding it out.
How about that?
How about that?
Did not see that coming.
That's exciting.
That is very exciting.
Let me see. I'm not going to read it.
Very excited about that.
Why did you hide it from me? Why can't I see what it is?
You're a blabbermouth.
I am not. When I'm told it doesn't go...
David's
doesn't
always been a blabbermouth. That's your mom.
I knew
again.
It was. I recognize.
David, you're a blabbermouth.
Oh, Henry, don't be so petty. Let your mate. He's got so little else.
Do you know enough about that city where you can take us out? We'll go get some good stuff
there. For sure.
Okay, good.
All right.
I hear great things about Mexico City.
I do, too. Great job by Bran, a.k.a. Spaghetti. We'll be on the lookout for the thick cast. Matt Money
Someone
Smith.
Should wheel him out of here. Remember to get him out of the podcast studio. Otherwise, he'll be stuck here forever.
He's like, yeah, instead of the courtyard, Spaghetti never leaves this spot. He just sits there.
Just sitting there.
For the next
staring.
8 weeks at least. Just creeping us all out, staring at us, judging. Matt Money Smith, of course. Check him out. The greatest radio show in the land. iHeartRadio is the home for Petros and Money and Handsome Hank. We'll look forward to your schedule. I'll look forward to it with the rest of the world. Apparently only Money gets to see Ciudad de Mexico. All right. We'll be back with Lance Erline and I believe Aqib Talib later in the week. Ooh. So be on the lookout for that, as well as the Thick Cast will be a part of our second podcast. In the meantime, thanks to Zaxby's. Go over there. We'll see you there next week, Nashville, Tennessee. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.